I'm having a McDonald's quarter pound hamburger topped with a slice of American cheese.
Sounds appetizing.
It is.
You know, Taylor, they have different names for hamburgers in different countries.
I did know that, Kevin. In France, for instance, it's called a Royale.
And in India, it's called a McCurry burger. But why do they call it a Royale? I mean, what's so Royale about it?
It's because Robespierre once saw a man from Hamburg, an aristocrat, eating a hamburger sandwich, and this being the time of the French Revolution, he slapped that stack of meat out of his hands and cried, Royale! Le Grand Meat Party!
Great story, Taylor. In India, Mahatma Gandhi... And there you have it, a reenactment of an exchange between John Travolta as well as subject of tonight's program,
Samuel LaRouche Jackson.
I don't know about you, Taylor, but I'm very excited about this podcast.
I'm more excited about this podcast than most other podcasts when I download them and want to listen to them.
I kind of can tell that from the amount of pins that you're wearing on your shirt.
And whose face do you think they have on them?
LaRouche.
LaRouche.
It's a very formidable regalia you're sporting today. And in such a casual setting, considering that no one can see this podcast.
I wanted you to see. I wanted you to know how much I care about this man and what he means to me and what I feel that he means to America and the world and our culture.
You're obviously very passionate about this subject.
Of course. I mean, how could you not be? How could you not be passionate about such a passionate man? I mean, come on. Passionate since birth. Samuel LaRouche Jackson. Or should we say, Doctor?
Doctor.
Samuel LaRouche Jackson. We'll shorten it Samuel L, if you'd like, throughout the program, but we don't want to give him any disrespect, because he merits, I would say, an absurd amount of respect.
An authoritative respect on the level of, I would say...
Plato.
Plato? Okay. I was gonna say maybe, Jimmy Stewart.
Oh.
In his more patriotic roles.
Okay, yeah. I'll take that.
When I think of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and the filibuster scene, I think to myself, I think if we did that nowadays, it would probably have to be...
Samuel L. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he would crush it.
And most people think that he's a bit of a yelly actor, and I don't think so, you know?
You know, that's actually interesting, because in my research I found out that while he does have a tendency to yell in his roles.
Who doesn't?
And plus, when people impersonate him, they'll just do like a yelly, scruffy Samuel L. Jackson voice. While Samuel L. Jackson does have a tendency to yell, he never, ever yells off screen. Because very early on, he developed vocal cord nodules, and they never healed all the way. So, potentially, every time he screams, it could be not only the last time he screams, but
the last time he talks at all. Samuel L. Jackson, probably one of the highest paid actors ever in Hollywood.
And not only that, he gets paid extra. It's in his contract if he has to yell.
He gets paid extra for a lot of things. His acting contracts look less like contracts and more like complicated invoices for, you know, like mechanical repair.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, though. I think we should start from the beginning.
I think so, too. I agree.
Okay, let's go back.
His childhood. Samuel LaRouche Jackson was born, not a doctor, in Washington, D.C., actually, in 1948, during the Truman presidency. A true Truman baby. And I think that speaks to his nature as person. True man. I feel like there's some kind of connection.
You can say that again.
Yeah. True man. I feel like there's some kind of connection. To know that somebody that I think is quintessentially American was born in our nation's capital with probably, I would say, one of the top five presidents in office at that time, really, it fills me with patriotic pride. And I just can't help but tear up a little. Every time I think about
it. It's called the Greatest Generation for a reason. I suppose 1948, that'd be the baby boomers. But his parents, he learned from the Greatest Generation.
Well, not entirely, actually. See, he was the child of a single mother who went with him to Chattanooga on his insistence that he meet Thomas the Tank Engine, who he hoped to meet, play with, and eventually live inside of. Unfortunately, he was disappointed at the ripe old age of decades old. I don't know how you age a train. Thomas was decommissioned, and Samuel flew into a rage. Really couldn't take it emotionally, knowing that his childhood hero and possibly his ticket out of this dump town,
Chattanooga,
was dead. decommissioned.
He screamed so loud and had such a fit that is when he got vocal cord nodules for the first time.
He didn't talk for 3 or 4 months on medical conditions, but he continued to not use actual words. He was driven into a sort of feral child madness, kind of like you see in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, with a little boomerang kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was a lot like that, but he would roam the streets of Chattanooga, wearing nothing but, you know, I suppose his birthday suit, his Prismo, and he would just grunt and growl, which only worsened his vocal cord nodules. Mm-hmm. To the point at which he was almost uneducated for a long portion of his life. However, a very perceptive and intelligent young man, he was able to actually pen 2 semi-fictionalized autobiographies.
Have you read these?
Absolutely. Feral Oxide, Iron Will and Madness in the Bayou, one of my favorite books.
Really? I haven't gotten around to it. I've read the other one, though.
You have?
Yeah.
Which was
good. It's a little adolescent.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit, but... If you asked me, I'd probably say it was written by, like, a 16-year-old, but how old was he, like, 8?
8, yeah.
So that's, I mean, that in itself is...
Feral Oxide is clearly written by a man of the ripe old age of at least 18 or 19 who has had the wisdom of such time. But around the age of 18 or 19, he was admitted into college with the incredible ambition of quadruple majoring.
Right. Well, he was sort of drafted into college.
They wouldn't let him not go in. I mean, you can't have 2 bestsellers and not be forced into the matriculation system.
Not only that, but, I mean, I think a perfect example of just the brilliance of Samuel L. Jackson was that towards the end of his years as a feral child, mm-hmm. His voice was the most hoarse and most weak and unsupported that it ever was, and supposedly ever has been. Mm-hmm. However, despite that, he still somehow managed to develop a huge reputation in the town of Chattanooga as one of the best orators around.
Yeah, he was the Cicero of Chattanooga. Unfortunately, there's not really much to talk about in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Right.
But he still maintained a very well-regarded reputation amongst everybody.
And his ability to impose really vivid, crisp imagery into the, you know, mediocre life that was
the
Chattanooga city, it really... it was really quite something, because it was the epitome of making something out of nothing.
And Samuel L., when he was admitted to college, he quadruple majored in astrophysics, acting, chemistry, and... Quantum physics. I was going to say Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, well...
But I accidentally wrote his name on the page there.
Well, he actually did go back to college after he got all these doctoral degrees, and... got a doctorate in Samuel L. Jackson.
I mean, how could you not? It's such a rich, interesting subject. But I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because we have an advertisement from one of our sponsors. Kevin, how do I look?
Honestly?
Honestly.
You look a bit pretentious.
Why? Is it my beret?
No way. It's that scarf.
Oh, I see. Well, how about this ascot, then?
How about no?
Well, I've got to have something to keep my neck well turtled.
How about a turtleneck?
That's perfect, but, you know, where could I possibly get such a turtleneck that I could possibly afford?
Try Turtleneck Town. They have everything to satisfy your turtleneck needs at a subjectively reasonable price. They could even take that old ratty crew neck you're sporting and turtle it in no time.
Oh, capital. I'm going to Turtleneck Town today.
I am going to Turtleneck Town today as well. And we are back.
The thing about Samuel L. Jackson and his education was that he was not just the sort of person who would go into school and follow the rules and listen to people. No, he did whatever the hell he wanted. All the time, anytime.
And better than anyone.
Better than anybody. In fact, he is an excellent, excellent pastry chef.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He somehow has cultivated... as some would call his greatest talent, in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking, confectionery, desserts.
Cakes, pies,
pastries,
cookies, meringues, all those things. And I think it actually has a lot to do with the fact that Samuel L. Jackson, from a very young age, at one point refused to ever eat anything that wasn't sweet.
Mm.
He's a man who only eats the most delicate of cream puffs, the sweetest of chocolate bars, the drippiest of candy canes.
The richest of truffles.
He is a bit of a dandy in that area, which I think is interesting, because it's not something that you usually associate with him or his tough guy image. It's not a Nick Fury.
Absolutely not.
Kind of thing.
But it's actually said that early in Samuel L. Jackson's acting career, on the back of an actor's resume, it's common to have a special skills section at the bottom. At the bottom of Samuel L. Jackson's resume, however, was just, under special skills, was just a list of desserts that he was really, that he had special recipes for. And it's all, I mean, it's been said that he never used to go to an audition without
a pocket full of brownies.
Pocket full of snacks.
Mm,
brownies, sometimes. Snacks, always.
Always. Yeah. Brownies were for only the really important auditions.
Well, supposedly his brownies are like, you know, top notch.
Yeah. If I could have a brownie made by Samuel L. Jackson, well, I don't know what I'd do.
Well, it would certainly change this show.
I don't know.
Oh, man. So among Samuel L. Jackson's other famous desserts are his lemon squares, mm-hmm. his crispy rice treats.
His seven-layer bars.
His raspberry almond bars.
Mm-hmm. And his Hershey Kiss drop cookies.
And during the holiday season, he can make a mean Yule log. I actually have a quote here from Quentin Tarantino. Quote, "I knew I wanted to work with Dr. Samuel L. Jackson when I first saw him in Goodfellas. I knew I wanted to continue to work with him on the first day of filming Pulp Fiction when he brought his secret recipe lemon squares on set. We actually fell 3 days behind shooting because of all of the time wasted eating his delicious lemon squares, crispy rice treats, and homemade fig bars. The producers got all over my ass about being behind, but it was all brushed aside the moment Dr. Jackson sent a tin of chocolate chip biscotti to the heads of Miramax." End quote. And supposedly since then, Miramax is just constantly barraging him with film offers, which he's usually not interested in unless Quentin is involved.
Well, the thing about the film offers is I feel like they're primarily motivated by the desire for more pastries. Talent aside.
And it shows. Yeah. And it's kind of shallow, Miramax.
Now, one of the interesting things about Samuel L. Jackson's film roles is you'll notice that a lot of his characters are bald. And this is actually not because he chooses to shave his head. Samuel L. Jackson was born without any hair on his head whatsoever, and he, since his college days, has been a crusader for the bald rights movement. His family, all bald. His wife, LaTanya,
mm-hmm.
bald.
Right.
Zoe, born bald.
It was some, well, for LaTanya, it was something that she had to accept when she got into the relationship, but I mean... Mm-hmm. To be in a relationship with Samuel L. Jackson?
Who cares?
I know, that's a... Please, shave it off.
Yeah.
Please.
I shave all the hair off my body for this podcast, just in anticipation that maybe I would meet him and maybe he would accept me.
Right. So this means that any time that you've ever seen Samuel L. Jackson in a role with hair, such as Pulp Fiction or Goodfellas as well, I mm-hmm. already mentioned,
yeah.
it's a wig. And Samuel L. Jackson...
Very choosy with his wigs.
Keeps all of his wigs mm-hmm. and burns them after use. Because he finds them to be disgraceful. If he has to wear a wig, there's a clause in his contract which grants him an extra $200,000.
And the right to burn the wig afterwards.
And, of course, ownership of the wig and the right to burn the wig.
It's curiously vindictive of him.
It's true, but I can't, you know, really, I can't fault him for it.
Yeah, you know.
I wasn't born bald, so I don't understand.
Yeah, you know, if it's his choice, you know, if he wants to be bald.
Right.
You know?
And it's his wig, so, you know, he can do with it what he wants. I'm just saying, I'm a little disappointed that the Smithsonian missed out on getting that Jerry curl.
Yeah, that's a big
because that would go really well on Archie Bunker's chair.
Big look. Shit.
Now, Samuel L. Jackson has a multitude of accomplishments across the board, not just in the acting and...
Pastry worlds.
And the scientific worlds, earning himself 4 or 5 doctrines and making it so his official title is literally...
actually Doctor, 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 Professor, Doctor Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm. One of his biggest accomplishments, though, is to be the only American actor thus far to have a satellite probe named after him.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2004, NASA launched the Dr. Samuel L. Jackson probe into space. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
It's not actually called the Dr. Samuel L. Jackson probe. It's simply called the Dr. Samuel L. Jackson 2.
Right. It famously took pictures of the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. A few years later, it took pictures of prominent moons of both Jupiter and Saturn. And in 2013, it's going to pass just outside the orbit of Neptune, taking pictures of its moons, Triton mm-hmm. being one of them. And it's going to take the... After that, it's going to go into the outer solar system.
And study exoplanets.
Exoplanets, but also take the first pictures of the Kuiper Belt.
Oh.
Right. NASA decided to change the name to the Dr. Samuel L. Jackson 2 from the Buzz Aldrin probe because...
Plus, Aldrin really just kind of stepped on some, a rock.
Well, it was also because Samuel L. Jackson has ties to NASA from meeting some NASA employees during the making of Sphere, who also had bald sympathies with him, and his accomplishments in astrophysics as well as quantum mechanics, and supposedly part of the reason he got the probe named after him, brownies.
Those brownies are quite influential. Yeah. A big part of his personality and a big part of his charisma and his sway in Hollywood, and part of the reason why he's so wealthy as he is. However, we've got a word from our sponsors to catch up with.
What are you doing, Kevin?
I'm trying to hang these mobiles, but this rope is just too darn thick.
Yeah, and it looks terrible.
And over here, I was going to tie the legs of this turkey together as I roasted it, but the rope caught fire, and now my whole kitchen is an inferno. And then, to take my mind off it, I tried to hang these distracting mobiles, but... Well, you know.
I do, Kevin. I do. Here. Let me show you something.
Is it more rope?
Kind of. Check it out.
Whoa. It's like a tiny rope. Did you invent a shrink ray?
Yeah, I sure did. But I didn't use it to make this. String.
String?
No. String.
Strank.
No. String.
Oh. S-T-R- string.
Yeah. See? It's 100 tiny fibers wrapped in a helix to fashion a tying device.
Strong, pliable, white, smooth, pliable?
Yeah.
Can I, try it?
Of course you can. Just unravel and revel. All dead inside. Wait! There's two coming out the window! Where'd you boys get that safety ladder?
We didn't get it. We made it.
With what?
This.
What is that? Some kind of shrunken rope? Did you invent a shrink ray of some kind?
He sure did, but we didn't use it to invent this string.
Strong?
String. String. It's finally here. Look for it wherever string is sold.
And we are back to talk about our favorite subject, Dr. Samuel L. Jackson.
And now it's time to get a little bit personal, because I feel like
we talked about his career and his life and like the things he's done.
The things that have gotten him in the newspapers over and over and over again.
But we haven't talked about the man himself. What's he like?
And we also haven't talked about his litany of smaller accomplishments, such as in the 1972 Olympics, he earned the States a bronze medal in the high dive. And shortly after that, he had a very short stint, I believe 2 seasons, playing for the
New York Knicks. Yeah.
They weren't paying him enough.
Yeah.
So he had to leave.
You know, I find that he's supposedly in his films, comes off as a bit of a brute. But I think he's actually quite a gentle soul. If you watch him in interviews, he's pliant and kind and soft-spoken and a very delicate man.
Very delicate. So much, in fact, that his delicacy actually inspired his character, or inspired the character he would later play in Unbreakable, because they saw such a talented man with such fragility, not able to yell, not able to sing, teeth rotting because of all the sweets.
You know, that's why he got the role for Mr. Glass.
He is Mr. Glass.
Deep inside.
Samuel L. Jackson also invented rollerblades.
Yeah.
He also has a mole on his back left shoulder that looks exactly like the Mandelbrot set.
He is an accomplished golfer, having become quite proficient at the sport, and he has a stipulation in his contract that demands that he be allowed to play golf during any shoot at any time that he demands, which is actually fairly often.
He's 6'9". He also was roommates with John Hinckley back in college.
John Hinckley being the assassin of Ronald Reagan, or attempted assassin.
And this was second go around at college that he was roommates.
This is when he was getting his major in himself.
Right.
In independent study.
On a more personal level, he's known to have coffee breath, and supposedly he's a very sore loser. There's actually a very famous anecdote that took place on the set of Die Hard with a Vengeance, where Bruce Willis beat him in a 2-out-of-3 bout of rock, paper, scissors. Jackson pleaded for rematch, or for it to turn into a 3-out-of-5, but when Willis would not grant it, Samuel L. Jackson stabbed him 4 times with a fork, and Jeremy Irons tried to pull him off and subsequently was stabbed twice, blinded in his left eye.
It's the passion. The passion really is what grabs people.
Right.
in his personal life as well as without it.
Right. I also read a quote from Uma Thurman that said this. While he is very talented and makes delicious treats, he's very gabby.
Yeah.
And he's the type of person, which I'm sure you know someone like this in your daily life.
Oh, yeah.
I think we all do. The type of person that if you were going to go see them...
You'd try to make an excuse to leave beforehand because he will not stop talking to you.
Which is a very Seinfeld thing, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. He creates a lot of sitcom-esque situations for people. And I think that speaks to the character of the man in general. He's vivacious, he's interesting, and he turns the whole world... into a movie.
Right. He makes the world revolve around him, and I mean that in the least pretentious way possible.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know what? A world that revolves around Samuel L. Jackson is a world that I want to live in.
Got anything else?
I do have a little bit of Reader Man.
Actually, I've got it right here, Taylor.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Read away.
Right. Today's listener mail comes all the way from Porthouse, Maine, from our friend Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Tay and Kay, I really liked last week's podcast on Moten Records.
Thank you.
I was most interested in the section regarding the Moten curse. I did a little more research on the subject and discovered that the curse is more widespread than previously thought. It turns out that the entirety of the Motor City, Detroit, has been cast with the pallor of doom and gloom even before Berry Gordy founded his famous company. During the Prohibition era, a gang of racketeers and rum runners ran roughshod through the city's legal system, murdering any who dared speak out against them, including musical and radio personality Jerry Buckley, child entertainers, the Singin' and Swingin' Sally Sisters, and even the famous Flopsy and Bocephus Gordy, parents of Moten founder Berry Gordy.
There we go.
Berry, a mere child clown at the time, could do nothing but weep, and allegedly the ghosts of his parents are responsible for many of the famous Moten stars' demise. Thank you, Bill, from Maine.
Thank you, Bill. It's very, very informative.
Yeah. If we missed something, or you have something that you'd like to contribute...
Or if you're Samuel.
If you're Dr. Samuel L. Jackson, we want to hear from you. So please, write in, keep listening.
Keep downloading, and that's all we have to say. Join us next week.
When we discuss candy.
This week's episode of Know It All with Tay and Kay has been brought to you by Dr. Samuel LaRouche Jackson's orthopedic and aerodynamic rollerblades.